Welcome to the Dad's Night Podcast, where ridiculous becomes reality. We're your dad hosts. I'm Chris Parrish.
And I'm Tommy Reed.
Today we're joined by Randy Hamilton, founder of Hamilton Wealth and financial manager to some of the biggest rock stars in history. We'll talk through growing up in Cleveland, making his way to LA, and how he got into advising the biggest names in the business. We'll also talk through the crazy rock stories and what kind of things we should be investing in for the kids. We'll cover pickleball, Knott's Berry Farm, my upcoming trip to Minnesota, and Don Reed's birthday, also known as Cabanapalooza. This podcast is brought to you by the Believe Network. What's up, Tommy?
Oh, man, that music just fires me up. You know, we're going into a holiday weekend. I'm fired up.
Big weekend. Stuff we'll get into later. This is my first time ever recording this podcast without my kids nearby. They hopped on a plane to Minnesota today.
You know, we should just get into the three W's.
You know what?
It sounds like you're pretty excited about some things here.
I miss them. Let's get into three dubs.
All right. So where are you going, what you doing, and what you excited about? Brought to you by thepostal.io. Hey, dads, what's the easiest way to delight your customers and prospects? Sending one-of-a-kind corporate gifts, of course, with Postal's offline marketing software. Postal helps companies to create meaningful connections at scale while tracking it all in your CRM. Learn more and get a free trial at postal.io/dads. All right, Chris. What you excited about here?
Number one, I'm excited about that read, Tommy. That was fantastic.
That was my best read.
That was the best you've ever done. Well, you know, a lot going on, Tommy. We got some upcoming stuff. I want to cover a few things about what I've been doing. And you were there on Saturday night. Our good friend of the pod, Dan Weinstein.
Friend of the pod.
Had a birthday party Saturday at the country club. And it was a pickleball tournament, a couples pickleballs tournament.
But it's not called the country club. It's called the club.
We call it the club. And it was a good time. You know, we had 16 couples, and they set it up a nice way where you play the first round with your spouse, and then to avoid divorces, they start mixing everybody up.
Oh.
And a lot of people are going to ask me. I came in second place.
Wait, hold on. So they start splitting you up. Is this in between the guy constantly being ushered out with pitchers full of margaritas and beers?
Yeah.
Because that's all I remember. I was sitting actually down with Randy Hamilton.
Oh, that's right.
And we're sitting there. We're like, I'm like, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was for the birthday party. Mm-hmm. Nice birthday party at the club then.
Put on by the lovely Wish Weinstein for her husband, Dan, who just turned 40. It's been about a 2 month of celebration, but it was a good time. Pickleball, no fights, no couples arguing.
That's good.
It can be tough. My wife didn't get mad at me. And then you were there, like you just mentioned.
Yep.
And then we had we had some tacos up at the top of this thing. And then you came up and you were the belle of the ball. Everybody wanted to talk to you.
Man, let me tell you, I think I crashed that party, but it was a good time. You know, we played pickleball earlier in the day, Don and I, and we played Jose and Genevieve Perez. And afterwards, we let the kids just play in the pool and had some beers. And then Randy comes over with his mom, who's a beautiful lady. And we started talking to her, had some more beers. And then next thing you know, we see you guys start arriving in your pickleball outfits and everything.
And then we had tacos up there. You came up. A lot of people wanted to talk to the pod.
It was good.
We did a great job. Everybody's sort of angling to be on the pod. You know, you should be very
My mother was
today,
very
Randy.
Excited to meet Tommy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Living in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Anyone tied to the Killed Irishman is a big deal.
Nice.
So she
as they should
she
be. Great film.
On taking a picture with Tommy.
Oh, God.
Did. Sweet woman.
Yeah. We're never gonna live this down. So it was a nice night.
That's great.
And who won the tournament? What's that?
Who won the tournament?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. I came in second.
All that matters.
Guy named Ben was a great guy. He came in second. He and his wife Melissa and I, we came in second. So I got a hat.
Dr. Ben Iyer.
Yeah, I got a hat.
Iyers, come on. I know. Dr. Ben.
Yeah, but Melissa? I don't like to talk about it if I don't come in first. But
so you're the first loser.
I'm the first. I was the I was like the best loser.
Typical
of the
Michigan
night.
There, Randy. I mean, first loser.
Yeah. I'm going to edit that out. And then we transitioned to Monday. It's my daughter's birthday last week, so I took her.
How old did she turn?
She turned 11.
Ooh,
she wanted to go to Knott's Berry Farm.
Very cool.
So yeah, I
How many girls did you take on that?
Five total.
Good for you.
It was about 90 degrees.
Ouch.
What a dad.
And you get down there and it's crowded, not too crowded. Definitely expensive.
You save some money not going to Disney though, right? Okay.
Yeah,
well, that's good. That's a win.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you got to get these girls water. It's like $5 a pop.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
And then you got to hydrate. You know, it's a long day. We left at night. We got home at 10. It was a 13-hour day.
Oof.
Wow.
Yeah. But my daughter was happy. Lainey, I love you.
That's all about.
It's that, never, that's she'll never forget this day, and she better never forget
that's
this
right.
day.
That's right.
11, come on. I mean, that's just a great, great, great time.
You didn't
good
lose
job,
any of them.
Thank you. Thank you. And then they, all three of them, Amy, Vetter, and Lainey, got on the plane today. They're in Minnesota.
Which lake is the big question?
They're on Side Lake, Minnesota.
Not Minnetonka?
No. So she grew up in Minnetonka.
Oh, cool.
But you land in, she grew up in Wayzata, which is sort of near Lake Minnetonka.
Oh, yeah, Wayzata. Nice area.
All these towns.
My wife's family's from Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. There you go. So they just landed in Minneapolis. They'll drive up 3.5 hours to the lake tomorrow, and then I'll...
Why is it always 3.5 hours? When I went, Snow would be like, we drove 3.5 hours north of Minneapolis.
That's it.
So and many then, lakes, like, it was like, you still have to drive it 3 hours?
It was like Clamshell Lake. There's like 20 lakes linked together and everything.
That's it. And everybody's got a house on it, and so I'm flying in next week. I'm not going to go till Tuesday night, but I'm connecting, so I'm actually flying up to beautiful Hibbing, Minnesota, the iron ore capital of the world, I believe.
Just pull tabs. That's it.
Bug spray. I'm going to be pull tabs and drinking Blatts, drinking Hams.
Yes. They got Mick Golden Light.
You got Mick Golden up there. You got Hams Special Light up there.
You're probably gonna, you might be able to find some old style.
Oh, I can absolutely find some old style.
Will you bring some home?
Picture. I will. I'm going to need a lot of beer.
God.
Kind of get through the week.
You know, I'm a little thirsty. I'm going to crack this Hams open right now in honor of Minnesota.
Ooh, look at that.
Yeah, little Hams.
I can't wait to report back. I'm going to have my own top 10 list from Minnesota. And
well,
it's going
to
be good.
That, you know, God bless Minnesota. It's a great place to be, I guess, year-round. Because I went
I don't know
it was
about that.
Frigid cold. Mm-hmm. But summertime, you're going to have some good lake time.
You're going to have some lake time.
You know, what we're going to be doing here is celebrating the 4th of July.
Oh, I can't wait. I'll be here for this.
On Marine Street Beach.
Yep.
My wife's birthday, the 4th of July baby. We're going to have Cabana Palooza.
Oh, I can't wait to get down there.
So what we do is that we, I don't know, get about 10 to 15 dads, and we go down around 6:30 in the morning right down to Marine Street, and we plop down our cabanas.
Stake your territory.
And stake our territory, so that way when we come down with our wagons, our electric wagons, of course, filled with coolers of beer and whatever kind of, you know, sports to keep the kids busy for about 8 hours on the beach.
Nice.
And we go down there around 10 o'clock in the morning, and we'll have Cabana Palooza, Dawn's birthday, and we'll be down there till about 5 o'clock at night, and then usually I go back to bar 533, which you're going to come to.
Tommy's. I'm going to be in Cleveland, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Well,
ooh, that's way worse.
We opened a bottle of Johnny Blue.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, so Johnny Blue.
Kudos to the founding fathers for honoring the future Don's birthday.
Yes,
very thoughtful of them.
You know, I think we got to get into a special something's brewing today. Okay,
I like
so
this. I like what I'm seeing here, by the way.
Yeah, so we have these little cool drinks, and Randy, in honor of you, I went and got some of these. They're called CANN drinks.
You've been reading my diary, Tommy Reed.
Oh.
I love cans.
Okay, well, I'm going to open these up here, and ooh, look
at
that.
Was a beautiful sound.
That is a beautiful sound for a can, and you slide it back, so it's a little, I think their thing is like trying to replace the Chardonnay Mom. I don't know. They got to come up with something for the dad part of it, too, because, I mean, these things are great.
They're amazing.
So cheers to you.
Cheers.
Thanks for coming on the pod today.
Salute. Yeah. Good cheers. To have you, Randy.
Salute. Thanks for having me.
Sláinte.
You're welcome.
Okay. So I'm double fisting. I got a Hams on my left and a can on my right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's something's brewing here. Sponsored by Can and Hams. I mean, we got it covered today.
We can't lose.
It's almost like a 4th of July special pod right now. Well, look. I'm super, super excited because we have Randy Hamilton, founder of Hamilton Wealth and a financial advisor, money manager to the biggest rock stars in the business.
Yep.
And I'm just super excited because I feel like we're going to get some good rock star stories and some really good financial advice as dads. I mean, Chris, you and I are both big spenders. We
big
love
spenders.
To spend.
Love to.
Our wives are constantly taming us down. Like, what did you
Who
buy
doesn't?
That for?
Yeah.
I mean,
we made
like,
a money.
Yep.
We actually, I mean, sounds really lame, but Chris and I have actually done a couple Costco runs together.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And not only, but
some
like
of my
record
most precious
time.
Moments.
Like, in and out. Like, how'd you get through Costco in 10 minutes? Well, line to the left. Got to know where you're going ahead of time. Boom. Mm-hmm. In and out. But anyway, very excited. Randy, tell us your background. I know you're from Cleveland, a place that's dear to my heart, and you have some not financial ties, but you have ties to my movie Kill the Irishman. And tell me how that is.
I was born in Panama on an army base.
Panama.
My father, the country. Yeah, my father was from North Carolina, and my mother's from Panama with Chinese blood in there. And we got to Cleveland in a roundabout way. I'll skip that part, but I went to John Carroll, played football. And,
John Carroll in Ohio.
In Ohio. It's like a football factory for management and coaching. The coach from the Chargers coached at John Carroll. Josh McDaniels, who called the plays for Brady for many years in New England, went to John Carroll.
New head coach of the Vegas.
Yeah, that's lots of John Carroll folks. It's this tiny Jesuit school in a Jewish community in Cleveland, Ohio, called University Heights. And part of hazing for football was you had to entertain the upperclassmen. So in between the double sessions, you had a two-hour practice in the morning, and then you had a break, and then you went to lunch before your break and before the afternoon session. And I was a corner. I was the smallest guy on the field always, whatever level I played
at. Quick,
though. Angry, chip on my shoulder, which helps in football. And this outside linebacker comes up to me and said, hey, you're a Panamanian, huh? And I said, well, half. And he's my girlfriend from high school. Was Panamanian. You want to do this entertaining the upperclassmen together? I said, sure. So how about we sing You've Lost That Love and Feeling from Top Gun? I'm going to play Tom Cruise, and you're going to play
Goose.
Kelly McGillis.
Oh.
So he sang. He played Top Gun. I played Kelly McGillis. We entertained the upperclassmen. And that's how I got to know Angelo Ritson, whose father was in your movie.
Keith Ritson. Keith Ritson. And he was played by, those who have seen Kill the Irishman, Vinnie Jones plays Keith Ritson, who was a badass of a man. Also, I think he was a heavyweight boxing champion at one point, Golden Gloves.
Yes.
Which in Cleveland, you know, that's a big to-do. So that's how he has ties to the movie Kill the Irishman. Mm-hmm. Very, very small world. He also knows a couple of mutual friends. Dominic Powell of the Powell family. He's friends with, is it Lisa?
Denise Powell.
Denise.
Crazy that Tommy, I meet someone in Manhattan Beach that is familiar with my small town of Wycliffe, Ohio.
Wycliffe, that's right. You know, Wycliffe is it's on the east side of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Very blue collar, middle class town, but great people. Just really good family people there, and I just have a magnet for those types of people. So again, we crossed paths that way, living in Manhattan Beach, and now all of a sudden, I think I then met you again at Randy Wilson's house, the Brisket King. You
came to
the party, friend of the pod.
A lover of rock and roll.
Yep, absolutely.
Myself, yes.
Which we can get some more clients from him, because he's friends with a lot of rock stars,
yes,
too.
Yes, he is.
So that's a perfect segue to now, how did you leave Cleveland to get into Los Angeles?
It's a crazy, crazy story. So my senior year at John Carroll, I was an intern at Merrill Lynch downtown on East 9th, and slaving away for senior brokers, cold calling cowboy, you know, grab a phone book and make 500 calls a day and invite Mrs. Jones to our investment seminar. And they hired me on, and most new advisors, their families connected to money. That's how they get their start. I didn't have that advantage. I just outworked everybody else. They hired me. I got licensed in August of 92, so I'm in my 30th year. But there was a fitness club I would work out downtown after my 12-hour days, and I had a buddy who was running this fitness club, Dave Clark, great guy. And after work, every time I'd go to the gym, he'd say, man, we got to get the fuck out of Cleveland. How are we going to get out of here? He hated it, too. So one day, I'm in my third year at Merrill Lynch, and I go to work out, and he's like, you're never going to fucking believe this. My cousin just replaced Izzy Stradlin in Guns N' Roses. My cousin is Gilby Clark.
Wow.
And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. He's like, Gilby says, come on out. I've got work for you. I need you. And that was 94. He moved to 94, and I followed him in 95. That's how I got to L.A. I lived on his couch in Sherman Oaks.
They're the biggest band in the world at the time.
Yes, and I met them, and Gilby was kind, trying to get me into meetings with business managers. Didn't go anywhere. Most of the business managers were looking for CPAs, not money managers, not financial advisors. I got nowhere. But nonetheless, it got me to L.A. I was living on a couch, literally four doors down from Ventura Boulevard. a few blocks down from Casa Vega, and I couldn't believe I moved from, you know, Wycliffe, Ohio, to, you know, having dinner at Casa Vega with, you know, Guns N' Roses in the corner, and it was just like mind blowing. And
Casa Vega is a great place.
Yeah, it's like fantastic. It. And that bar area is super dark, and I think that's why the rock stars loved it, and I certainly loved it. It was a blast. But I grinded it out, got nowhere for many years trying to break into music. I was managing money for civilians, normal folks. And I crossed paths with, serendipitously, a friend introduced me to a business manager who changed my life in 2001, so 6 years after moving to L.A. His name was David Weiss. He is a monster today in the business management world. He's got some small clients you may have heard of, like Coldplay. And
Coldplay, hold on, let me look this up.
And The Weeknd.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got big clients. So we became mountain biking buddies. A year later, he sat me down. He says, I want you to go to, I was working with Bank of America Investments in Beverly Hills at the time. He goes, I want you to meet Sal Hudson. Don't wear a suit. I go, all right, who the fuck is Sal Hudson? So I get there, I don't wear a suit because rock stars don't want to see suits. Mm-hmm. And it's Slash from Guns N' Roses. Gosh. And I couldn't believe it. Slash and Perla. And I've got what they call an imposter moment. I can't believe I'm in this fucking room with
exactly.
Slash
yeah.
and his wife Perla. So I signed him. It was my first rock star.
Oh my gosh!
And that was 2001, 2002, and I was on my way. Unfortunately, don't work with Slash anymore. The thing about music and rock and roll, they switch up teams, business managers, financial advisors quite often. It's very volatile.
Yeah.
Business. But you know it. I was on my way at that point, and it was, then I signed, shortly thereafter, I signed Jack and Meg White of the White Stripes.
Mm-hmm. From Detroit?
From Detroit, yep. It's, I think, 2001 or 2002. The business manager said, we're going to go see them in Phoenix. I went and met Jack and Meg on a bus, on their tour bus in Phoenix. And after about an hour, he told the business manager, I want you to move bunch of money to Randy, and that was 20 years ago. So, a lot of hard work and luck at the end of the day. You know, I always say the harder you work, the luckier you get.
For sure.
And it certainly happened for me. That's
for sure.
I mean,
like once you're in a conversation and you're like, yeah, I just did this investment. Well, who's your business manager? Who's your financial guy? They're like, well, this guy, I'd love to meet him. And you're like, you want to help out your friend.
Exactly.
Especially if you're doing well. So I'm sure that you have a lot of referrals that coming from your other rock stars and everything. Can you just go down some of your, I mean, like, this is really impressive. It's almost like a catalog that it was like a dream catalog to have and be a part of.
Shortly after working with Slash, because that was Velvet Revolver days.
Yep.
I signed Scott Weiland. And that was like, mind-blowing for me as well because I was such a huge Stone Temple Pilots fan.
Sure.
In fact, you know, I moved in 95. In the early mid-90s, rock and roll was already being taken over by boy bands like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, and that shit drove me fucking crazy. And when grunge took off, it was more dour and dark, and that was more my mood. The grunge bands like Alice in Chains and then Smashing Pumpkins in that same era, Stone Temple Pilots. But I meet Scott Weiland, sadly the late great Scott Weiland. I show up to his house, and he is really excited. He just got a box delivered to his house, and I'm in his kitchen with him and his wife Mary in Sherman Oaks. And he opens this box. I go, "What's in the box, Scott?" And it's these custom made roller skates. And I'm like, roller skates, huh? He's like, yeah. I'm throwing a 40th birthday party at a roller rink. And the theme is 70s roller disco. And he's like, you're coming. I was like, wow. I mean, again, another imposter moment. I can't believe I'm sitting in Scott Weiland's kitchen. And he puts on these roller skates. And he starts doing roller disco in his kitchen. And me and Mary, his wife, are just cracking up.
Yeah.
And he's doing all these moves and just so funny. And then a few nights later was the party and went to the 70s disco party. And it was great. But, I worked with Jane's Addiction and Tool, Shinedown, Shins, Jack White, Vampire Weekend, Alice in Chains.
When you're at Scott Weiland's house and he's opened up a box with custom roller skates, as his financial advisor, are you asking him how much did those cost?
No, I mean, no, I didn't feel I was in a position to ask about roller skates or, you know, most of the time, the business manager is like the financial quarterback.
Yeah.
He's helping him buy a house, cars, helping the bands on the tours with jets, buses, hotels. They do a lot. They wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
And then they farm out the wealth management part to me. So by the time the artist, by the time the business manager is referring them to me, they're out of debt. They have their house. And it's sort of compartmentalized. You just manage their stock and bond portfolio.
Right, right.
You don't tell them to stop spending 100 grand a month or 200 grand a month.
Right.
And they shouldn't be you know, leasing homes in Bel Air for $100,000 a month. That wasn't my place. I was basically, you know, they would come to
You're
me
hoping
and say,
that's
okay,
taken care of by the time it gets
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, to me, they're asking like, okay, how do I grow this money before I piss it away and I got to go on what's called a 401k tour 30 years from today.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm very, very fortunate, very lucky. I love what I do. I, you know, again, hard work and luck.
Right.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, those are some really crazy big names right there. Do they ever ask you any kind of like testing questions, Randy, that you like that you use books in your past or you quote something?
Yeah. I mean, every now and then an artist will ask about a certain company and you either got to say, you know, yeah, you know it or no, you don't. You either know about, you know, Apple or you don't know about the company they may be inquiring. Some artists do, some artists don't. You'd be surprised. You know, someone like Jack White's very involved with his portfolio, and someone like Mick Mars of Motley Crue is like, you know, Randy, go do your thing. You know, and signing Mick a few years ago, I was just, you know, at his house in Nashville a couple months back in his basement, and his basement is nothing but Marshall amps lined up on
Hell
all the
yeah.
walls. It's super
Mick
cool.
Mick Mars, man.
And my business partner's from Cleveland. We grew up together, and you know, even though I've been doing this for 30 years, working with rock stars for 20, it doesn't get old. I mean, we're walking up Mick Mars' driveway, and we're looking at each other, and we're like, we're about to go into Mick Mars' basement and listen to some of his solo work, which was amazing, by the way. But when I signed, most of the time, they don't ask you financial questions, but it's a vibe. And I try to learn as much about the artists as I can before. I come in prepared. I know more about the artist than the business manager, than the lawyer, the agents in the room. And most of the time, I make it a point to have seen them live at least a few times before. If there's any chance I could get in a room with the artists, I'm going to go see them,
right,
even if they're not a client. I obviously seen Motley Crue several times. They were, you know, huge in the 80s growing up. I loved Motley Crue. But when I met with Mick, and again, it has more to do with vibe than
sure.
knowledge. They assume that you're in the room with their accountant, manager, lawyer, agent, CPA,
Jesus,
that you're competent. You know what the fuck you're doing. So it comes down to vibe. And with Mick, I said, you know, Mick, thanks to you, I knew what the inside of a strip bar looked like when I was 14. And he's like, well, how's that? I go, well, girls, girls, girls video.
Yeah.
I said, but you kind of fucking ruined it for me because I grew up in Cleveland. And the first strip bar I went and walked into did not look
no.
the girls, girls, girls video by any means. And he just cracked up, loved it. And yeah, it never gets old. You know, I still to this day, my happy place is on the beach with my family or enjoying rock and roll with an adult beverage and cannabis and my wife, my partner in crime, and friends. That's what it's all
great
about
couple.
To me. Yeah,
great couple. How do you invest for the, I mean, obviously they're dealing with multi-millions of dollars, but like, if you were to give a dad buddy the same advice you give Jack White, how do you start off investing their money?
Yeah, so we do things a little different at Hamilton Wealth. We do not subscribe to you got to have money in small caps and you got to have a certain percentage in mid caps and you got to have a certain percentage in international stock. I think that's all bullshit. We do it quite differently. We invest around themes. Like what trends, what mega trends are going to happen? We can participate in these trends regardless of what's happening in the economy, what lunatic may be inhabiting the White House, whatever is going on. What are some global trends? And we've identified what we believe are some trends like global aging, you know, baby boomers, 80 million Americans that were born between the mid-40s after World War II, up until the Vietnam War. There's 70 million of them left. And regardless of what happens to the economy, they need their hips replaced, their knees replaced. Heart disease is still the number one killer. Takes out 600,000 folks. Probably take out me sometime in my 60s, like most money managers. but so we find these themes. What companies are going to help our parents and grandparents age more gracefully? Digital revolution is a theme. Every industry is getting disrupted. So we want to own the disruptors. We own Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft. Global growth, you know, most of the growth, global growth will happen overseas over the next 20 years. China, India, Indonesia, Vietnam. We want to make sure you own companies that are participating in those parts of the world, like Starbucks and Nike, who've been very aggressive. And then the last thing we call cash flow. Where can we get money coming into the portfolio, not having to wait for the market to go up? And so we look for, you know, companies that pay high dividends, like AT&T and Verizon. We don't do what I call mouse traps. We don't do a lot of the hedge funds, private equity stuff, you know, that are high fees. We are disciples of Warren Buffett and John Bogle of Vanguard. Control what you can control. Your spending, your behavior, risk, the amount of risk you take, fees, how much, you know, how much you're paying your advisor and how much you're paying for the actual investments in the portfolio. These are things we can control. We can't control the market. So how do we control, how do we get our arms around those things that we can control? Look, every advisor has their own philosophy or strategy. Sure. This is what's happened to work for us. It's worked out really well. It differentiates us from most shops. We are big believers in, like, one of the trends that's happening in the industry because of Warren Buffett and Vanguard, fees are coming down. But the big wirehouses are fighting that. You know, the Merrill Lynch's, UBS of the world. I got my start at Merrill Lynch. But if you got your money managed by a publicly traded company that needs to report earnings every quarter, what incentive do they have to cut your fees?
Right.
They don't have an incentive. So they're fighting that trend. You can edit all that, I'm sure.
Bore
the fuck out of you. No, those are all good tips.
This is what dads want to know, man. Okay.
I mean, how much of you know, you meet Mick Mars, how much, I mean, is he involved or like?
Some clients are involved. Jack White's very involved.
He wants to hear what you just said.
Jack wants to know what's the strategy, what's the game plan, and look at these five companies. Tell me what you think.
That's okay. That's what
so
I was getting
like,
at.
Yeah. So would he be also on like, hey, I see Russia moving into Ukraine. We should drop in some Northrop Grumman, some Raytheon, some Boeing. I think we should invest in some of the military defense stocks, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, those stocks have hung in well. They're down for the year as well, nowhere near as bad as the market. The problem is, you know, if anything happens regarding a treaty or something, those stocks are going to tank. Okay. So I would wait for the treaty and peace. Those stocks will tank. Then you buy.
Huh. You know,
so
have you been in a situation where like, so one of your clients comes to you and says, "Hey, I really want to do this," and then you say, "Like, man, I just based on my instinct, that's not a good move."
Right. That's a penny stock.
Right. Yeah, but I just want you to do it, and then you do it, and then it fails, and then it's like.
Yeah, I don't say I told you so to Mick Mars or any other rock star. You know, when they're going to speculate on something, a penny stock or something, and it does happen, we say, look, I tell them, only invest what you can afford to lose. And, you know, so go small. That's the same advice I give with clients regarding any kind of small speculative stock, crypto, private company. Yeah. These are speculative investments. It's not like buying Apple or Google. You know, go small and you know, whatever number you have in your head, cut it in half. You know, if you're thinking about investing $100,000 in that restaurant of your buddies, put $50,000 in, you know, just go small.
Restaurant investments. I'm sure the rock stars are always investing in a restaurant investment.
Yes.
Speaking of restaurants, where do you like to go take your clients? If you were to pick some LA, and LA's got some of the, look, you go to Casa Vega.
Yeah.
That's a dive. But if you want to go to another, like, steakhouse dive or, like, where do you like to go?
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to rack my brain. I typically meet the clients on the road. So I don't meet them. I meet them at the business manager's office or my office or on the road. So, you know, backstage before a show, sometimes after the show. Some artists don't like to see anybody before the show. Some artists are okay with it. But yeah, I'm typically not breaking bread with the rock stars.
That's funny. Like
seeing them on the road.
I was a musician. I still am, technically.
Yes, I
can't imagine. I was never in the position to meet my financial advisor before a show. I didn't have one.
Right,
no finances.
Yeah. Well, things have changed. You know, the artists now know that they can't count on the record label to sell them millions of records. Mm-hmm. So that those days are gone. And so it's become more, you know, for lack of a better term, corporate. They understand that, you know, they're going to perform. They've got a finite career to perform. Unless they want to do these, you know, what we call 401k tours that we, you know, there are bands out there that are doing tours that don't want to tour, but they're doing it because they didn't save enough money. They pissed away, you know, their savings and investments accounts. A lot of my artists, like Motley Crue, they don't need to tour. They just sold their catalog for $150 million.
Right.
Alice in Chains just sold their catalog for $50 or $60 million. These are artists that are, on the road, because they want to be.
Right.
It's something they enjoy.
So how did they make, so you're saying that record labels, you really can't count on giving them the advances and the dollars behind the sales of the albums. Is it the number one way the rock star makes money is going on tour?
Absolutely. Yeah. Streaming is catching on to, eventually it will catch on to record sales and overtake it. It may have already industry-wise. But not all artists are making a lot of money streaming, obviously. Obviously representing artists, I don't think Google's YouTube pays artists enough for streams. I don't
for
think
sure.
Spotify pays artists for streams, as Chris, you know, or you're well aware.
Oh, I'm well aware.
Yeah. So
can the artists make their own website and have streaming from there?
Like, well, artists, a lot of the artists are signing with a Live Nation who will say, look, we're going to help you do everything. We're going to market you. We're going to get you on TikTok. We're going to take a cut of everything. Merch,
sure.
Touring. We're typically labels, you know, took a smaller cut. Live Nation's taking a little cut of everything for the from the artists, but they're going to tell them, we're going to get you, as many streams as possible. We're going to get you endorsement deals. We're going to get you into a video game. Movies,
yeah,
because the Guitar Hero is that a big video game for
yeah
a lot of them?
I mean yeah I
they
mean
they have to get their music right
yeah Jack White's song Taking Me Back was featured when Call of Duty just came
right.
out yeah
Jack White can definitely play at bar 533. I'm just
he
saying
is, let's
maybe
put it
Dad's
out there
night,
let's put it out there let's invite him,
let's put on the vision
bring
board.
Some bring a Motown spin.
Put a little vision board out there
Detroit's,
for 2023.
I love it. I'm writing
like
it down right now.
I just played a surprise gig at Glastonbury for like 100,000 people a few days ago. Go to YouTube and check that out. It's extraordinary.
Is that in Scotland?
It's in England.
England.
I've watched almost all those performances.
It's
every year that's unbelievable.
It's like a big farm, and it's like
awesome.
The original big festival.
And,
that
and
all
did,
the other
and
festivals.
And you just did it for free? Just to
no, no. Oh. Of course not. No. Oh. No, no.
Damn.
No.
Well, that's
healthy,
crazy.
Healthy payday for him.
Of course.
Yeah.
But what if he just loves like swag? We could sell him on bar 533 that way. He'd come over for dance night.
In your queso.
What if Jack White just loves smoked queso? He just
I mean,
hasn't
it's,
had
and
any
you're
good
from Detroit.
He's, and I'm from Detroit.
You know, I saw him, we were making Kill the Irishman in 2011 in Detroit at the Cadillac Hotel. We'd have the whole cast go down, you know, and have cocktails after they were done filming. And then over there, he sat by himself, and no one even approached him.
Mm.
It was weird. I went over there, and I'm like, we got to invite Jack White over to the crew. And I was like, dude, just leave him alone. Like,
yeah.
He just wants to be, I'm like, all right. I'm like, I just found it was crazy. So how would you give Chris and I some investment advice? If
well,
we were like, I mean,
brought
obviously.
You, I brought you each ooh. Some swag.
Oh,
and
I love
book.
Gifts.
Book.
That looks like reading.
We yeah. love gifts.
You can listen to the book. It's called The Psychology of Money. I've sent
it out.
My
problem is whenever I'm listening to something, it's this podcast. That's
yeah,
all
right. Of course. You got to listen to your
okay,
voice.
Okay, so we have The Psychology of Money here.
By Morgan Housel. He used to write for The Motley Fool. Incredible writer, blogger, came out with this book.
Thank you for this,
it
by
is
the way.
Extraordinary. If you don't have time to read it, it's like a four-hour listen on Audible.
Huh.
And everything like...
I just read
really?
That.
So this is the book that can thank change you. Our lives for dads?
Yes, it could change your life.
I mean, because like, look, we dabble in the market, but I mean, I'd love to get better at.
We will help you.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Save more money. You guys, you know, that one of the themes in the book, you know, probably don't want to hear it. My business partner is a certified financial planner, so he does all the long-term planning.
Okay.
And he'll tell a married couple today, look, you've got one-third a chance one of you is going to live to 90, 95. So how much money do you have saved? Remember when COVID hit and we no longer were earning income? Now, imagine that for 30 years. Hopefully that puts some fear in you to start saving more.
It just Jesus. Did.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, you need to save more. Ideally, you know, at least 10% of gross household income. Ideally, though, 15, 20% of household gross income
per year
should be saved. Yeah.
So you got to put that in like what, Roth IRAs? Or?
Just sock it away into the market. We like low cost index funds and low cost index funds and individual stocks.
Can you ever go wrong with what I call like the big four? You're going to say Amazon, you're going to say Apple, you're going to say Microsoft, you're going to say Google. Can you ever go wrong with, like, if we were to just say, okay, when in doubt, put your money in those four?
We happen to love those four.
Yeah,
when the market was crashing in 08, about 3 weeks after Lehman Brothers went under in September, in October we started buying Apple, and we still own those shares. I call...
You're probably up 232% or something crazy.
We're up 4,000%, which means 100 grand.
I mean, I live in a house in Manhattan Beach, partly because my wife, who's a freaking genius, invested in Apple like 20 years ago.
Yeah, my house is the house that Apple built, for sure. 4,000% since the 08 crash. Google's up 12 or 1,500% since the 08 crash. I mean, look, those companies are great, but you're still going to have to stomach some volatility. Amazon's down 40% in the last year.
Right. Isn't it a good time to get in there? Because a bigger part of the business is the AWS cloud?
We think so. We think so. By the way, boys and girls, do not take anything I say as financial advice. Go sit down and consult with your overpriced financial advisor.
Parlay Parish and Tommy the Teaser over here. That's what that's for. This is great advice we're getting, Randy. You kidding me? Parlay Parish and Tommy the Teaser. That's the law.
Parlay Parish is a home run track record. That's for sure.
Football's coming up.
Past performance is no indication of future performance.
Yeah. Both my past and future.
But I love those four. I don't think you can go wrong with that. Okay. You nailed it. We got to save. But kids, what should we be doing if we don't have a 529 plan? Or, like, I know I got one, just one, because I'm like, it'd be very highly likely, I think, if both my kids do go to college and one doesn't have some kind of scholarship or something like that. But we figured that we could always transfer it to the younger one if the first one doesn't use it or whatever it is, or doesn't want to go or whatever. But do you have to have a 529?
You don't have to have a 529, but they're so inexpensive to start. And there's huge tax advantage. The money doesn't grow. The money grows without being taxed every year.
Right.
Which is a huge advantage.
But then is it taxed when you take it out?
It is not.
Really?
As long as it comes out for higher education and computers and Wi-Fi and any books, anything like that connected to education is included. And even if your kid doesn't go to a traditional four-year university, vocational schools are covered, art school, music school. It's just nice that our clients that bought into the 529s 10, 15 years ago, you know, their kids are going to college and they're not writing checks.
Yeah. Right.
They're calling us and saying,
that's great.
You know, send Vanderbilt $60,000 this year or whatever it is.
There it is.
So 529s, you can get started with very little. You can do automatic, get it on autopilot, $100 a month, you know, $200 a month, whatever, something to take
And what's the max write-off every year?
There is no write-off. You can
gift
each child $16,000.
A year.
So you and Dawn can contribute $32,000 to each child for education. Sadly, you know, SC, I think, is $60,000 to $70,000 a year, which is insane.
Ohio State's up to $45,000 out of state. Wow.
Dollars?
That's crazy.
Yeah, $45,000. When I was at Ohio State.
What do you even get at the end of that?
Thank you, Chris.
Ouch.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Ouch.
You get some championships, and you get the best friends of life.
You get eggs and kegs in the morning.
Well,
the Buckeye
games. I
didn't
go there, and I got a good friend.
Okay, so 529s, do it if you don't have one.
Yeah.
Start there. Okay, what about ourselves? Like, I remember, I know my wife was very upset, and she's like, I shouldn't say that. She wasn't upset. She's like, you can't hold debt. Debt is the worst thing anyone could ever have.
Yep.
So she immediately transferred my brain into thinking that, like, I have to knock off my debt as soon as I possibly can. And did that before I even was married to her, because she was like, I'm not going to marry anyone with debt.
Mm.
So I had to wipe out a lot of debt in a very short amount of time to get my financial self into understanding how to make myself a successful businessman later on in life instead of just constantly spending on whatever I wanted to.
Yeah, we're not big fans of debt, so I would side more on the side with Don. However, you know, my mortgage is at 3.75. So if you got a mortgage at 3.75 and you can make 7 to 8% in the market consistently after taxes and fees, you keep your money in the market.
Okay.
So if you're, you know, if your money's growing faster than your debt, you want to keep those investments
and that's,
going.
You know, we've gone back and forth on that. My wife is very much like Don, where we're not having debt.
Mm.
That was mostly directed at me. I was a musician in my 20s.
I'm a producer. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We're both in entertainment. Yeah. Musician, producer.
You guys, everything's going to work out at some point.
Exactly.
Sometimes it doesn't work out.
That's why we're the best partners.
That's right.
Art and commerce. Very tough gigs, you guys. Very tough. I have so much respect for those that are trying to do art and commerce.
So, you know, we've refinanced a couple times. And then I'm
great.
If you're paying like 2.75 and then you say, okay, well, almost anything I can put my money in right now is going to make more than 2.75. But we all grew up. You know, in the old days is the wrong word, like the Midwest, where it's like you get a 30-year mortgage and then one day you die.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what you do.
Very true.
It's very different out here where we bought our house 7 years ago in September. We've been able to refinance a couple of times because the asset's going up.
Right.
Typically, I say like, okay, like Manhattan Beach, for example, if we've got a real estate crash, then guess what? The world's over.
Oh, completely.
There's a finite amount of space out here. But it's tough to wrap your head around that. Like, I pay the same, even though we refinanced, I pay the same payment I was already paying just because, like, I'm paying down.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like the smart thing to be doing right now.
Everything moves in cycles. We're going to have another housing, you know, downturn at some point. But if the housing downturn nationally is down 20%, Manhattan Beach will be down 10%.
Right.
We can all stomach that if you're not over-leveraged.
And especially if you're not trying to sell. We're just hanging out.
Yeah. You know, I think Warren Buffett's partner, Charlie Munger, said, you know, smart people lose money by liquor and leverage. And and we're big believers in, you know, no leverage, minimize debt.
Right.
So I'm on the side of your wives. Sorry, guys.
No, they're classy ladies.
They're the reasons why we live in Manhattan Beach.
1,000%.
They're hardworking women that make us better men and trying to make smarter investment decisions. It's great. What do you like to do for your daddy time?
Tell
us about your family. Tell us how many kids you have.
Yeah, my son Jude is 7, and my second son Bowie is he'll be
rockstar name
5 on 7/11, July 11th, and like 7/11, he is always open. Jude is 7, very sweet, typical firstborn, does everything you ask him to. Lovely, great personality, gets along with adults really well. And Bowie is our savage who will gladly rip your heart out, chew it up, and spit it out in front of you. But, you know, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
When I met Kelly, I said, I'm not into getting married and I don't want to have kids. And she said, well, see you later.
Yep.
And I go, let me rethink that. let me rethink that. Because I was madly in love with her. So I said, look, let's negotiate. We'll have one. We had Jude. And, number two was in negotiation and oops. I never thought I'd be a dad. I didn't have a dad early on. So I was probably terrified. A fatherhood.
Oh, for sure.
To be honest.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I always figured I'd have kids at some point. I was with Amy for 5 years. I remember it was February. I remember the month. And she said to me, hey, listen, we've been together 5 years. I want to start having kids. If you don't, then we should break up and stop wasting each other's time.
Mm-hmm.
I slept in my car that night. I freaked out so hard. And I came back. I talked to some guy at work who just was like, you're never ready for kids. All you can do is find a partner that makes you feel like we can do this together. That's the best you can possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't read any book. And I came back the next day and I was like, I'm a loser. My God, I'm so sorry and all this stuff. And then now we're recording a podcast. My daughter's out of town. I got a little bunny rabbit sitting here with me because I miss her so much. Like, it's crazy how that goes.
That's
right?
Lovely.
You know, there's no way to prepare yourself for that. I mean, my friend is having I saw her today for lunch, Harmeet, and she's having a child next month. And I said, the best 10 million moments of your life have not even happened yet.
So true.
Right? It's just,
yes.
You can't even wrap your head around it.
Yeah.
Know? Well, I mean, I'm down on the beach, and every time you are one of those dads that cannot sit still, and you're always doing something with your kids, and frankly, my kids and 5 other couples' kids, because You're like this kid magnet that you're playing wiffle ball. You're throwing footballs with them. You're playing the frisbee. You're shooting. You're kicking the soccer ball with them on the beach. You're an Uber dad, and we all see that. And we all notice that. So yes, of course, there's no book ever written. But what, like, if Kelly's out of town, what do you like to do with your two boys?
Play. I mean, sports, the zoo, the aquarium. Just do a bunch of stuff, and. I probably can't answer that without talking about my childhood. You know, I was born on our Army base, and my father got restationed to Fort Dix, New Jersey. We moved to New Jersey. He gets restationed to Korea, South Korea. And the marriage starts splintering. We moved to South Korea, so my mom and my father can work on the marriage. It was very tumultuous, not fun. And we left Korea, never saw him again. And then my mother said, by the way, that wasn't your father, that was your stepdad.
Jesus.
So my first father figure was actually my stepdad. My biological father, I call him my sperm donor, because that's all he was, yep. Essentially, was a sperm donor. So my early years were quite tumultuous, and we moved all over the place. My mom had one friend in Cleveland, who, same thing, married an American GI. She was Panamanian, like my mother. Had two kids. They took us into their apartment. We, eight of us, lived in their apartment for a few months. My mom had tons of odd jobs, and I was second grade, so seven, and tons of odd jobs. Housekeeper at Days Inn, crossing guard. You know, ultimately ended up working at Macy's for 25 years in Mentor, but. You know, it was very tumultuous, and I just didn't want my kids to ever experience that. So when you see me and you think I'm being super dad, I'm overcompensating, according to my therapist, right? I'm overcompensating probably for based of on what I experienced early on. But hey, it all worked out.
Absolutely,
you know,
sure.
And my kids are benefiting from that, and I just love playing. We have serious jobs. I've got a serious gig. People are really stressed out about money. And so when I'm with my kids, I want to play, whether it's splashing around in the pool, running around on the beach, on a bike, skateboard. I just, you know, what do our older friends tell us about their kids? It goes fast.
It does.
And
super fast.
I constantly, it's a mantra in my head when I'm, you know, complaining about, you know, them not eating or beating the shit out of each other. I just remember it goes fast.
What do they say? That the days are long and the years are short.
Yeah, right? Years fly by, but the days are long.
I mean, being at Knott's Berry Farm on on Monday, and it's a long day, and it's hot and all this stuff, but my daughter's having the time of her life, and that's all that mattered. Like, it didn't matter. I want to leave 15 minutes ago, or, like, my feet are tired or whatever. What's going to matter is that time my dad took me to Knott's with my friends, yeah. And we had a great time, and we got to go on all these rides and all that stuff, you know. When we're all sitting on our deathbed, hopefully not for like a super long time, those are the things we're going to remember, and not like, oh, I should have worked more.
Exactly. Or I should have absolutely gone and done this. And I got lucky. My mom remarried a wonderful man from Euclid, Ohio, near Wycliffe, when I was 12, introduced me to football and the Beatles. And so I was nice. Obsessed with the Beatles and rock and roll. My son is named Jude. Hey Jude was written for Julian Lennon, Paul McCartney.
Yeah, right, by Paul McCartney.
What happened with John Lennon after he met Yoko Ono, he kicked Julian Lennon and his mom to the curb, kind of deserted them, and Paul McCartney wrote the song Hey Jules. He ended up calling it Hey Jude, but it's about Julian Lennon, who was deserted.
I never knew that.
And I experienced that, so I named my son Jude. But where was I going with this tangent? Sorry,
that was great.
have you taken the kids to any shows?
It's so funny. I'm torn about that. I have not yet. So close to taking. Jack White played the YouTube Theater a month or so ago.
Oh, that's a great venue, by the way.
Oh, amazing venue. Incredible. I've seen Eddie Vedder there and now Jack White.
Greatest singer of all time.
Sound is incredible.
Yeah.
So fantastic. And Jack played a second night, and I thought about taking Jude, but it was 9 o'clock, middle of the week.
It's tough.
It's, you know, super loud. He's not going to wear his earphones. But
I'm taking the kids to Ohana Fest in September.
You are?
Yeah. Cool. And that's an easy one because it's there's tons of kids there. It's right by the water. It doesn't go super late. You're not
beach
in
life.
It.
You should take them to beach life. That'd be a great one.
Yeah, I think beach life would be really easy. It's there in our backyard.
Is that in September?
Oh.
Yeah, the beach ranch. It's called Beach Ranch.
Oh, that's a new one coming.
We're at the Lumineers that Friday. I think we're going to
Hall and
Friday.
Oates. Hall and Oates. Yeah.
Pete well, I mean, Ohana has Eddie Vedder.
I know
Jack
that,
White
but
this
still,
year.
But,
so yeah.
But it's
he's
also
playing.
Down. Yeah. You got to rent a house. But right here in Redondo, it was so classy. The one we this last one, beach life. I was shocked. It was my first time there. But a lot of kids, they have foosball tables for the kids set up. Like, they made it so it's really family friendly for a music venue, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Cause I think it's good to expose your kids to concerts.
I agree.
I have yet to take my kids to any concert.
Jude would be fine. Bowie would be a challenge. I mean, Bowie will be 5 on 7/11.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah. But Jude is ready and wants to go to shows. We, you know, a heavy rotation of music performances on YouTube at home.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Are you instilling any new traditions that you never had growing up that you want to have with your family now? Or do you have any traditions that are passed on to you?
I tell them I love them several times a day. I didn't have that from a father figure. And so it sounds silly, but yeah, my kids are never going to grow up and say, my daddy never said he loved me.
Exactly.
You know, So I make it a point to tell them how much I love them every day, and again, always keep in the back of my mind that there's going to come a day. Every August, in my Twitter feed, I don't tweet, but I use it as a news feed. But every August, what happens? These parents are sending their kids away to college, and they're saying goodbye, and these videos are just
brutal.
Heart-wrenching.
Brutal.
And I'm looking at this and going, this is my future, and I am not going to be able to handle this.
No,
when
not
Jude
at all.
Says I'm going to
Ohio State. We could thank Google for that because it shows you all the pictures. This is your 1 year anniversary of this picture, whatever.
Right. It's
going
to be
like
hard.
It's crazy. Is it crazy as it gets and all the shit's going on? Like, you just want some alone time, or let's say end of the night, they're not in bed in time or whatever. There's going to be a day soon for all of us where they're just off.
Yes.
And then they're just literally not there anymore. Like this house with my daughter not here, I can't even fathom it.
Mm.
And maybe when it gets to that point, I'm ready for it, but I doubt it. That's not how I'm built.
My business partner has an 11-year-old, and he reminds me that you don't have them till they're 18.
Mm-mm.
Somewhere before that, they no longer want to be with you.
Sure.
So I always remember that. We don't have them till they're 18. Mm-hmm. Mentally, emotionally, we have them till they're probably 13 or 14, and then they want to be with their buds.
Yeah.
So
my daughter's turned 11.
Yeah, you've got a couple more good years.
Yeah,
And then she wants nothing to do with you. Good luck with that.
I'm depressed.
Sorry. Have a can.
There you go.
These always work.
Hey, now I'm happy.
Or that PBR with the cannabis in it. Mm-hmm. One of the best parts of being a dad is the gift of life experiences. Kids won't remember gifts, but they will remember life experiences. What kind of experiences do you expose or want to expose your kids to that matter?
Again, this is going to sound trivial for most dads, but I was never read to. My mother was Spanish. She didn't have a great command of the English language when we moved to the States. I didn't grow up with nursery rhymes or any of that shit. So I make it a point to read to my kids. Every day they have to read. I read. It's one of the things I love to do, but I wish my parents read to me. So I know it sounds like probably normal for most dads, but yeah, reading is a big part, and I want them to dream and wonder and have this expanding imagination. And that's what reading does.
That's a great point. Do you make it so you're like, okay, guys, it's family reading time? Like, or do you say, okay, boys, go get a book? Or like, how do you, cause that could be scary at times to kids. We're like, oh, here comes reading time again. Like, that's hard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Jude is already bellyaching about it, you know, and he's 7. And he wants to read these baby books. And I go, no, you got to go get a level 2 or level 3 book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we got enough football books. You know, he loves football, so we'll read a football book. But, Jude's starting to provide some pushback. Kelly is a rock star mom. She'll handle dinner and bath, and then I take over for reading and bedtime.
That's awesome. How do you support the mom? How do you support Kelly? And when I mean that, like, we are luxury that all three of our wives actually work too. So we're dual income families, which I think it's very hard not to be. But if you have that, and we do have that, how do you support Kelly? What do you do? Do you give her alone time?
Look, she just went to France for Cannes Lyon, which is a big advertising conference for a week, and I got her on the guest list for LCD Sound System at the Amazon party. I think I'm supporting her okay. But she takes care of lunches in the morning. I take care of breakfast. We're a team, right? And I think it works best as a team. I'm very lucky. She's got a great gig with the LA Chargers. And she knows that, you know, most hangovers, I take over. She needs more sleep. We're a team. For
that's
sure.
That's awesome. And you guys are a great team. We think you guys are a great couple, just a great family. So it's fun getting to know and grow our families together.
Absolutely.
At the same time. Parenting philosophies. Do you have any? Do you want to instill anything?
You know, I want to instill grit. And how do you instill grit with a kid that's growing up in Manhattan Beach?
Oof.
That is a fucking challenge.
You got a box.
Well, that's why I got my kids playing football. I got three herniated discs in my lower spine trying to take on pulling guards. And I thought I'd never let my kid play football. But it's a way to teach them grit. The great thing about football is you have to learn after getting your ass kicked, play after play after play, you have to get up. You have to get up and get ready for the next play. And at the same time, I understand parents that don't want their kids to play a football, but the one thing that I have running in my head is these kids are coddled and they are very fortunate. They've got resources, but how do we instill grit? And so that's, you know, something I'm wrestling with all the time.
The grit of life, getting up when you're kicked down, getting back up again and again and again.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Man.
It's not what happens to you in life. It's how you respond.
That's awesome.
And but it's a challenge here in Manhattan Beach, right?
No,
Let's face it.
I think it's going to be interesting for you, I think, as your kids get older and they're cognizant, to understand what you did to ensure that they had a better upbringing than you had.
Yeah.
Right? They probably don't understand that now, but...
Yeah.
You know, I say the flip of it. My stepdad was here a couple weeks ago. My father died when I was six.
Ooh.
And he came and
Sorry.
He was here for the pod. I appreciate it. But I lucked out. I got a great stepdad. Mm. And my mom was a super strong woman, but I don't know what life would have been like without that father figure there. And then you have people in your life and you know people, maybe the dad or the mom is just like not there.
Yeah.
And the fact that you are... Your entire focus basically is to ensure that your kids don't go through the things that you did.
That's a great point, Chris. It's about breaking the cycle.
Yeah.
My mother had a shitty upbringing in Panama. She did not meet her mother till she was in her 30s. Couldn't understand why her mother never sought her out. And then something similar happened to me. So to me, it's like, it's my job to break the cycle.
Yeah.
And to your point, my kids don't understand why I don't know my sperm donor dad, but they will someday.
They will, and, but like for now, you're just like super awesome dad who's there all the time.
Yeah,
so
I also had a good coaching in dad. My mom, like you said, I had a great stepdad.
Yeah,
and was into sports. And my mom would have never let me play football.
Right.
My stepdad said let him play.
Yeah.
So I started Pop Warner or something similar to Pop Warner in third grade and took a liking. It saved me because I was an angry, bitter kid with a chip on a shoulder without a dad. And football saved me. It was an outlet, and it served me well.
Nice.
Well, I can't wait to see you coach again in the BCS this fall.
I'm looking
exciting.
Forward to it.
The BCS is easily the best.
I hope to accomplish what you did, Tommy.
Well, I know you will. You're very active, and you love sports. So, this is fantastic.
I took my team in the Super Bowl first season as a head coach too. By the way,
oh boy.
Just an FYI.
That's
but
sick?
I lost.
Oh, okay,
but
well,
I lost.
Well, I mean, it's just even getting there.
Yes.
It's just so fun.
It's the journey, really,
it was
this
so
thing
fun.
That I've
it's
never experienced.
So
you know,
it's
one of the, I'm sure you experienced this moment, but, you know, the night before Super Bowl, in the huddle with the kids, and I'm giving a pep talk, and I'm just like almost getting teary-eyed. I look at Jude, And I say, Jude, when you were just a baby, I would say to Kelly, I cannot wait to play football with him.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to play catch football. Mm-hmm. Here we are. We're going to play in the Super Bowl tomorrow. It was like amazing. It was crazy.
It is. It's so crazy, fun.
I played last night with some of the family who's leaving today. The boy last night wanted to play Double Dragon 4, which is on PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just playing this like old school Nintendo game. They actually made it for PlayStation, but like made it look like it's old.
Okay.
So it's not like actually violent because you can't figure out what's happening. It's just I'm playing video games with my 7-year old, the way I used to play with my friends, and he just thinks I'm so good at it, and I suck. Like if I played my brother, I'd get my ass kicked.
Right.
But my son just thinks I'm a god, and we're just like playing
as he should,
talking through it, and it's amazing. It's so much fun.
This has been fantastic. Chris, do you have anything else? I mean, like, I feel like I'm going to invest my money smarter.
So, yeah, we're probably going to talk offline about my money.
Save more money. Invest it. Go see more live rock and roll.
Go see live rock.
It's great for the soul.
Your two kids have the second and third best names in Manhattan Beach.
Jude and Bowie. Well, Vetter's great.
After my son, Vetter.
You know, that song Daughter relates. I think that resonates with me, obviously.
Yes. And I think that's the first conversation we had.
About Vetter, yeah. Yeah, when I was like, your dad obviously is
Jude,
obsessed.
Jude, Bowie, and Vetter. I mean, this,
I know, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah. What was your favorite rock show?
Of my whole life?
Yeah. Obviously, Pearl Jam. Which show?
I would say, well, I mean, like for me, the first Pearl Jam show I saw was March 23rd, 1994. That was at
Vitalogy?
It was just after Vitalogy, which was December 93. Vitalogy was 94. So they played a bunch of songs that were coming out on Vitalogy.
Okay.
This was the Versus tour.
Got it. Oh, the Versus tour. Versus, yeah. Yes.
And then I would say Eddie that I saw in February was unbelievable at YouTube Center.
Yeah.
That was incredible. He had Chad Smith on drums.
Crazy.
And then, Amy and I went.
Tom Petty's keyboardist. Do you want to meet him? Because I don't want to meet you too. I'm just,
telling me that Eddie's awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
That I wouldn't mind.
I would be such a geek.
Hey,
like a
you
want
to go fishing?
Yeah.
Let's go back to Seattle.
I'd be such a fangirl with you two. I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah,
how about you, Tommy? Best rock show?
I like the U2 at the Rose Bowl recently.
God,
that was
amazing,
a great show.
Right?
Was that the
Joshua Tree tour? They redid the Joshua Tree tour? Or was that?
No, there was.
Was this like 4 years ago?
No, it was like 2011, 12 maybe.
Okay.
We have some really cool coffee mugs they brought in. Can you tell us about this? Because this is going to be my new favorite coffee mug here.
Yeah, I figured I'd bring you some swag, and you would be nice to me. My partner and I were back.
We're very inviting.
We were back in Detroit.
Love it.
We run the Jack White. He's such an amazing guy. So instead of having a portfolio 2 to 3 times what he has with me, he has 150 people at his label, and they're producing, manufacturing vinyl, selling vinyl. I mean, he was on the vinyl thing way before anyone else is. And he employs, like I said, 150 employees in Detroit, Nashville. We go. He's got great shops at both venues, at both spots. His record label is called Third Man Records, and the color scheme is black and yellow. And they've got tons of cool stuff. They do shows there, and Pearl Jam actually played Third Man Records. You can actually look up that performance on YouTube.
Wow, that's
awesome. But, yeah.
I'm making a note.
Thank you.
Here's some swag.
This is great. Thank you, Randy.
Yeah, of course.
Well, this has been a phenomenal podcast. First and foremost, we love seeing you around town. We love seeing your family. Very, very, very family-friendly. You know, you guys are always doing fun things together. You're very active. I can't wait to see what your team looks like this year in BCS. I know they're going to be having fun.
BCS.
I love the BCS. It's the best.
I love.
Now I'm excited.
We need coaches too, Chris. Yeah. I don't know why you're not.
Listen. The boy might want to do it.
I mean, BCS needs coaches.
We are so lucky to live in this amazing community with great families. Pinch myself every day.
All right, everyone. Thanks for taking time to listen to our Dad's Night podcast, brought to you by the Believe Network. Please like and share with a friend or two that you think would enjoy this ridiculous banter. Because after all, Dad's Night is where ridiculous becomes
reality.
All right, Chris, what's our handles?
You know what? On Instagram, we are at Dad's Night Podcast. And you can drop us an email at dadsnightpodcast@gmail.com.
And thank you to all of our friends of the pod that are constantly sharing, telling a buddy or two to listen to it. John Bagley in Columbus, Ohio. Mark Skogstad in Minnesota, Skogie.
I'm going to see you next week. Our friends in Spain.
Skogstad. It's Skogstad. He's going to kill me.
Yeah, you know what? Minnesota can take all the pub they can get. They'll take anything.
Skogie. It's Skogie. It's like Skogstad.
You know?
Michael Skogstad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, another beer, Chris.
No, dude, the whole time in Minnesota. Yeah. He was yelling at me. I'm like, fuck, I've known this guy for 25 years.
Yeah.
Skogie. Anyway. Anyway, that's the can kicking in right there.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. I appreciate your time. That's it. Have a good fourth, everyone.
Hey, Tommy, Chris, thanks so much for having me. And I'm loving the pod. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.